Blog Talk Radio.
Now it's time for some mind, body, and soul food with host Tanya Parker. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Mind, Body, and Soul Food. I am your host, Tanya Parker, also known as the Natural Sister, here to dish up some deliciously delectable consciousness-raising creations for your mind, body, and soul. I'd like to thank the wonderful Gay Adegbolola for starting us off this evening with her Hungry Woman Blues. We hope tonight that we have the cure for that on this show. And every second Sunday at 6, when we serve up a big dish on natural and holistic healing to feed your mind, body, and soul. Well, to get started on this beautiful Sunday evening, let me share with you a bit about myself. I am the creator of Mind, Body, and Spirit Works, whose mission is to facilitate restoration of balance to mind, body, and spirit through divinely inspired holistic healing and education services. I've always seemed to have something cooking with healing and teaching. So you take a big old scoop of years as a psychotherapist, a prevention specialist, and a corporate trainer, and then blend in a dollop of additional education to get a natural wellness certificate, several years of developing my intuitive gifts, and finish it off with a few pinches of my current work with the body through massage and Reiki energy healing, as well as my work providing healing workshops, teaching public speaking, and facilitating conscious communication. And voila, the result is this tasty little radio program, Mind, Body, and Soul Food, which provides an opportunity each month to feed our listeners with mind, body, and soul-nourishing information from a variety of gifted holistic healers and light workers. I'd like to thank all of you who listened last month for the first part of our Matters of the Heart series with guest Danielle Hatchell, Dear Danny, who shared her insights on creating and enhancing our love relationships. It has been receiving a lot of listens on demand, so if you haven't tuned in, make sure you check it out here on Blog Talk. So last month was Heart Health Month, and this month is Women's History Month. For today's show, we have as guest a woman who is creating her own history, helping mainly other women, but also men, to enhance their heart health and other areas of wellness. So we offer a warm mind, body, and soul food welcome to Dr. Damon Jones. Welcome, Dr. Day.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful. The sun is shining and so am I.
Oh, excellent. I love hearing that. Well, could you tell our listeners a bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Dr. Damon Jones, but most of my patients just call me Dr. Day, and I am a naturopathic physician. And naturopathic physicians or naturopathic doctors go to a four-year medical program where we learn to become what people would consider primary care physicians. So when you go to your primary care doctor and you have a throat problem or your stomach is bothering you or you have heart palpitations or whatever the problem is, we are focused on supporting people but using the most natural methods and behaviors first before going directly to using pharmaceuticals or surgery. So we use tools like food and herbs and homeopathy and counseling, physical medicine, to integrate those into your lifestyle to try to help you regain your natural health. So my practice is focused on helping people in those ways first so that people don't have to use surgery and pharmacy unless absolutely necessary.
All right. So it's like you are maintaining a fine balance yourself between what nature provides and other types of interventions to help folks.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, you know, as I told the listeners, you have, at least when years ago when I was working in your practice, I was renting space from you, and I know you had a lot of women patients to come in, and I know that you have worked a lot with heart health, and you wrote a wonderful cookbook and you do cooking classes. Could you tell us some of the other pieces of your practice?
Sure. So, absolutely. I started out seeing patients, and my primary focus is women's health, because as women know more, we kind of teach that to our children and we implement that in our families. And so I think it's crucial for women to understand their health and ways that they can support their health and the health of their significant others and children and extended family. So within that practice of talking to women, what came out of that, like you mentioned, was I ended up doing a lot of cooking demonstrations, which turned into a book over time, right? So I started doing cooking demonstrations to teach people how to create simple, healthy, quick foods that tasted good. And over about three years, I kept getting requests for more opportunities to try a recipe that I had done last year or last month, and that turned into a book. And so as a result, I started writing first, you know, recipes. And so this kind of we're talking about heart health, and heart health is, as you talked last time, definitely spiritual and also physical. So in a way, this was my way of sharing nourishing, healthy heart, what was my heart's desire with my patients, as I created a book. And from that book, which I sell on Amazon or I sell on my site to give people insights in how to eat healthy and how to work with the physical body, I started writing. And so I actually write, I have my own personal blog, and I also write for other blogs to teach people about understanding about their body and understanding about their mind and how those two work together constantly to create a healthy life or create a not-so-healthy life, depending on how we're treating ourselves. So I do a lot of speaking about that, either from a writer's perspective or from going to people's offices or conferences or teaching opportunities to really kind of help people understand mind-body connection.
Wonderful. Well, that was a mouthful right there.
Yeah.
And if we could just focus a little bit more on the mind-body connection when it comes to heart health.
Sure.
I mean, I think we hear that all the time, and some people may think they have a grasp of what that means, but if you could break it down for us about how is our mind and body connected in terms of our heart health?
Well, I think that one of the key things that people may or may not consider when we look at heart health is that, first of all, our heart is like the engine that runs everything in our bodies. So it's really important to understand that our heart beats, and whether it beats fast or whether it beats slow, is a function of whether we're exercising. If we're exercising, maybe our heart's going to be a little bit faster. But our heart may also beat faster if we have a situation where we may feel some anxiety or we feel fear. So here's an example where, you know, our heart is beating and the thoughts that we're thinking actually create our nerves to send signals to our heart to beat faster. So when we're thinking about this mind-body connection, when we are having or in a state of anxiety or a state of fear, that causes our heart to beat faster. And so there's actually a physical response that happens from the thoughts that we're thinking that impact our heart. The same token, if we're really happy or really excited, we have signals that are sent, again, from our thoughts, patterns in our brain through the nervous system to our heart, which can also make our heart beat faster. So our emotions and what we're thinking are very tied to how our heart beats, and it also is tied to hormones that might be released. So when people are under stress, for example, mm-hmm. we release a hormone called cortisol. So when we feel stress, like we feel pressure, like in caveman times when we saw a saber-toothed tiger, maybe we felt very stressed in that moment, and we released all these hormones that impact not just our heart, but the rest of our bodies.
Sure.
And we're kind of focusing on the heart right now. So that stress caused our heart to actually pump faster, and it impacted our blood vessels, which impacts our blood pressure, for example, impacted our alertness and what we were able to be ready for to protect our lives. Well, we've moved out of that scenario. There's no saber-toothed tiger that's coming at us now, but perhaps when we go to work, we may feel the same type of stress because we're afraid our boss is going to yell at us or our boss is going to fire us. And one of the concerns when we're talking about heart health is that when we feel that anxiety and stress, our heart starts beating faster and it beats harder and our blood pressure goes up, for example, because that's one of the diseases that is part of heart disease. We consider that part of heart disease, and it's a very common illness that we as human beings are experiencing at this time. And if we feel that stress about our boss and we feel it every day and we feel it all the time, and we feel it 5 days a week, that actually creates a scenario in our bodies that actually makes our body overwork itself or work too hard. And that creates a lot of pressure on us, and that could create high blood pressure, and it can create the stress of feeling that anxiety around this particular situation that happens over and over and over again starts to impact us and can start to cause other issues like plaques, which create high cholesterol. That stress on our blood vessels could impact us that way. So our mind and body are very much connected. And if we have thoughts that create stress or negative emotions consistently, that impacts and actually causes a higher risk for us to be concerned about heart health, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart attack, you know, anxiety, those kinds of things.
Wow. You know, and I'm thinking you were using the example of if someone was having an issue at work with their boss. I'm thinking about the overwhelming amount of stress that can surround folks these days. I'm
mm-hmm.
thinking about, for instance, in this Washington, D.C. metro area, just even getting to work.
Right.
Whether it's going around the Beltway or dealing with 295 or even taking the metro in, it's stressful. It can be very stressful. And I do remember a time when I was living where I am now and commuting back down into Virginia. It was a 50-mile drive one way every day, and I felt my stress levels rising each afternoon. I came early enough in the morning, but every afternoon it was so stressful getting home that I was totally exhausted.
Exactly.
Totally exhausted, and I knew I had to make a change. Loved the job, just did not love the commute. And we have, you know, we're busy people in this
yeah.
day and age, you know, with the financial crisis going on for folks and with, you know, any type of concerns. I know for me, at my age right now, what I'm encountering is more people, more of my mom's peers, my aunts, uncles, and other folks are passing away, and the loss can trigger stress, and mm-hmm. even people my age and younger, I mean, you know, case in point, I won't say younger in terms of Whitney Houston, but, you know, people who are more accessible to us, we're seeing it over and over again. There's so much stress in today's world. And so I can only imagine what impact that has mm-hmm. on heart health if we let it.
Absolutely. So, again, as you, the focus and mission of your program is to talk about mind-body connections. And so what I have witnessed in practice, I've been practicing for 10 years now, is that stress is a major contributor to most of our diseases, whether we recognize it or not. It's an exacerbating factor. And so as we think about heart health for women, there are kind of a couple different things that we want to look at, because we want to look at are there specific issues like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, are there issues around having a heart attack? Do we have a history of those types of things? Do we have other factors that are going to enhance those issues? Like, for example, when people tend to be overweight, meaning that if they have an extra 15 pounds or 20 pounds or 30 pounds or 40 pounds or 50 pounds for whatever reason, that actually is a contributing factor, and it makes them more susceptible to heart health. Do they have a family history where their immediate family, like their brothers, sisters, mom, dad, and then sometimes you can look at extended family like grandparents, aunts, and uncles, or cousins. Do you have a history of your family having that, which also is a contributor to heart health? Do you have other significant diseases like diabetes, for example, increases the risk of some type of problem with heart disease? So when we are looking at heart health from a physical standpoint, all of these things can impact, and our lifestyle, can't forget that, what we eat, if we're exercising, have we been eating well for a long time? Did we just change our diet? Have we been exercising for a long time? When we look at all of that, that also contributes to the physical issues related to heart health. And then if we look at Eastern philosophy, like if we look at Chinese medicine, if we look at Ayurvedic medicine, the heart represents our emotional base. So when we look at issues of depression, or we look at issues of anxiety, we look at other kind of things that in Western society we're considering mental health problems. Right. Grief, like you said, for example, if you have long-standing grief, not just because someone just passed away a few months ago, but years that you haven't addressed. Those are also could be considered from an Eastern philosophy standpoint as heart issues as well, because those are kind of the mental and the mind and the spiritual issues that also can impact your heart health, because usually when you have issues of depression or anxiety, maybe you're not taking the best care of yourself, making the best mm-hmm. decisions for your own personal health, because you've kind of shut down a little bit in the way that of self-care. So when we look at heart health, we can look at those different components, and those all impact the way that we can look at heart health from a feminine standpoint.
Well, it's interesting that you were mentioning that, the Eastern view of the heart. I was reading in a Huffington Post article last month about, well, different aspects. It was an update on heart health, and they were talking about broken heart syndrome, which I had heard of before. And they were saying that a number of studies published last year in 2011 substantiated the existence of what's become known as broken heart syndrome when a period of intense stress, like a breakup or loss of a loved one, leads to heart failure or heart attack-like symptoms. And I just think it's amazing how that can happen. You know, I think we speak metaphorically all the time about a broken heart and it hurts my heart, and you see this connection where it can actually physically hurt your heart.
Yeah, so one of the things that as we look again at this connection of the mind and the body, there are different ways we can kind of break it apart. So one of the things that I love about naturopathic medicine is we look at the Western science, because there's a base of Western science, but then we also look at the Eastern philosophies or older techniques or traditional techniques, and people, you know, kind of use different terminology for that, and we give those equal weight when we look at patients. So when I look at patients, I don't say, well, this one is good and this one is not good, or this one has been substantiated and this one has not been substantiated. I look at both as I work with patients, and I think what's happening in the Western model of medicine is they are now being willing to look at how our emotional health impacts our physical health. And we're, again, we're starting to kind of go back to one of the things that I had talked about before. So with this idea of your physical health, the thoughts that you think, if you are depressed, if you have you're used to being around someone and working with them or living with them, or they're part of your day-to-day activity and they're no longer there, how does that impact your well-being? And so when we're talking about things like broken heart syndrome, or you look at couples who've been together for a very long period of time, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, and then one of the spouses dies, and then you see that the other spouse life then is shortened or may die soon after that. You know, these are things that we can actually measure in Western society and in studies to say, well, look at what we're noticing. And from a physiological standpoint, if we look at the body, when people have stress, like I said before, the nervous system kicks in and the nerves release signals that create stress in the body, hormones are released in the body. So you have scenarios where the physical body can change as a result of what's happening on the emotional plane. Sometimes when people have, whether it's not considered clinical depression, or it may be considered mild depression, or it may be considered clinical depression, one of the symptoms of that is that sometimes people don't sleep as well, or they lose their appetite for food. And though while those are mental symptoms, they have really huge impacts in the body. Sleep deprivation or inability to sleep causes people to be more tired, to be more irritable, not to think as clearly, not to be able to perform their daily activities as well, not to feel depression. Also, people tend to not exercise as well. So people's physical health can start to change as a result of not taking self-care, not taking pride in that or an understanding of that. If people have less of an appetite, for example, they're not getting the nutrients that they need. We take from food, while it may be wonderful and it can be comforting and it can be very tasty, we also have vitamins and nutrients and phytochemicals that we need, macronutrients like proteins or carbohydrates or fats that we need for the body to function appropriately. When we don't have an appetite, we may not be taking in and consuming the right types of foods to get those vitamins, nutrients, and fuel, because that's really what food is, into our bodies so that our body can operate optimally. And that causes stress on the body. And stress over a long period of time starts to break down our body systems because we cannot manage the weight of the stress without getting those nutrients that we need. So absolutely, there's starting to be this convergence of looking at these mental, emotional, spiritual symptoms in a way that we can begin to study them to see some of these things like broken heart syndrome or people after a loss or having grief, you know, them deciding that their lives are actually shortened for a period of time. So it's a wonderful thing to be able to understand that from a scientific standpoint. And it's also really important for us as human beings to understand that and say, what kind of help do I need to get out of a cycle if I'm feeling depressed or if I'm feeling anxious or if I'm feeling brokenhearted, so that I can actually take care of myself and increase the longevity and the quality of the life that I'm leading.
Right, right. Well, I do want to get more into the food aspect in a few minutes. Before that, I wanted to reference again this article that I read from Huffington Post that was talking about laughter.
Okay.
And I think many of us who kind of intuitively know about this mind-body connection, we don't need studies to substantiate that this actually works. But I think it's a cool thing that it's happening because more people in the Western world are getting on board and are advocating more types of stress management and other interventions versus just treating an illness. And so this one was about laughter, and it was talking about how previous research has shown that stress and other negative emotions cause blood vessels to constrict,
mm-hmm.
which reduces blood flow. But now researchers have discovered that the opposite was true of positive emotions. And they had a study where participants were shown clips from a humorous and a stressful movie, and they found differences in the diameter in the vessels. And so, you know, the old saying has been laughter is the best medicine. So that's pretty cool, you know, to know that laughter truly can be great medicine when it comes to heart health.
Right. So absolutely. One of the things I do with my patients is I try to make things very simple for them. So, for example, with the study that you're talking about and some of the writing that I do, I'm a patient advocacy writer for empower.com, which is a great resource for women about all different types of health issues and health problems. And there's a lot that we talk about around heart disease. And so when you're talking about that study, what is important for people to understand is that when we talk about someone's blood vessels are constricting, what that means is when our blood vessels are open, then our blood can get to every single nook and cranny of our body. And what it brings to every single cell and every single nook and cranny is it brings oxygen, which we need for each one of our cells to breathe, and nutrients that we need for each one of our cells to have energy to do their job. So when you are explaining that, basically what we're saying is negative emotions cause our blood vessels to become very small, and so oxygen and nutrients aren't able to get to each one of our cells, and our cells need those absolutely to breathe and to have fuel to do their jobs. And when we are able to laugh or we have positive emotions and we're happy, that causes our blood vessels to be able to open up very wide. When our blood vessels open up wide, we can get oxygen and nutrients into all of our cells so they can do their job. And so it's really key, I think, for people when I'm working with them to say, hey, these studies are really important, and I find them fascinating. Let me tell you why it's important to you. It's important mm-hmm. to you because when you have those positive emotions, when you can think, when you can pray, when you can meditate, you know, when you can do mind-body interactions, when you can calm yourself down from a stressful situation, when you can see the joy and beauty of something that's going on, when you can be in a relaxed state, which is the state that we really should spend most of our time in, when we're in those places, we're able to get the things that we need, our oxygen, our nutrients, and everything, for our cells to do the job that they want to do, and that helps the healing process. And that's the gift that we learn from looking at some, like you said, the scientific studies, it's great, But we don't always need them to understand that, that feeling good, feeling relaxed, doing things that make us laugh and make us happy actually push the body in the right direction of healing. And
yes,
that's a great thing I got from that article as well.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, you know, right now I would like to pause and see if there are any listeners who would like to call in with questions. The number is 917-889-7806. Again, it is 917-889-7806. Make sure that you press the button to speak with the host, and we'd love to take your questions. And in the meantime, let's pause for a message from our sponsor.
Introducing Visions of the Heart Spiritual Life Center, an interfaith, interspiritual place rooted in the essence of love, truth, wisdom, and community. A sacred place where you can explore and realize your divine connection with spirit. Go to visionsoftheheart.org to learn about the Sunday services, Tuesday evening meditation circle, First Thursday Reiki healing circle, and much more. Directed by Senior Minister Reverend Anthony Farmer, Visions of the Heart Spiritual Life Center is here to welcome all hearts home.
All right, and it looks like we had a caller who had the hand up, meaning that they wanted to call, but if they have a question, they can definitely let us know. So we were talking food. You got started on there are some foods that can provide wonderful nutrients, et cetera, et cetera, and you do cooking classes, and you also have this wonderful cookbook, Delicious, and right when I'm about to get started, the person put their hand up again, so hold on.
Sure.
Let's take the caller in the 202 area code. All right, caller, you are live on the air. Do you have a question for Dr. Day?
Yes, I do.
Yes, could you tell us your name?
Sure, my name is Bertha Cross. And I'm a fitness coach, and I wanted to ask her about the negative effects of plaque buildup that she spoke about, and also what are some solutions for clients.
Okay. Hi, Bertha. So the negative, the plaque buildup I was talking about, in our blood vessels, one of the things that can happen over time is in our blood vessels. This is why doctors are concerned when you go to your primary care physician, they're concerned about your cholesterol levels. Cholesterol, cholesterol, cholesterol. We hear a lot about that. One of the reasons why doctors are concerned about cholesterol is because if there are high amounts of cholesterol floating around in the body, the cholesterol can actually get trapped on the blood vessels and create what we call a foamy plaque buildup. What that does is it actually reduces the space in the blood vessel. And over time, if someone continues to have cholesterol issues, more than one of those foamy plaques can continue to build up, and it can actually close off that blood vessel. And that's particularly, if it closes it off, then that means the nutrients and the oxygen are not able to get to your cells. That's particularly dangerous if someone has that happen in the blood vessels that supply the blood to the heart. And when that happens, that's called coronary artery disease. And if that happens, someone could have a heart attack. So these plaque can be built up anywhere in the body, and that can cause high blood pressure. But in addition to causing high blood pressure, if it happens in the heart itself, then it can cause a heart attack. So this is why people have a concern about having high cholesterol. Now, that could be high total cholesterol, or it could be high LDL, which sometimes people call it the lousy cholesterol. Remember that. And the HDL is called the healthy cholesterol, which is the good cholesterol. So when you go to your doctor, that's what they're talking about. And that's when they have a concern when you have high numbers of cholesterol. So one of the things that you can do to help that process, actually, is eating foods that have a lot of fiber in them, particularly soluble fiber. So when you have, so soluble fiber, if you think about things like oatmeal, you think about beans or legumes, if you think about things that if you plant-based foods that when you cook them for a long time, they turn into mush, that would be soluble fiber. And because there's another kind of fiber, which is called insoluble fiber, which is also important, but it's, if I think, when you think about celery, like the, you can chew celery, but it will only break down to a certain amount. So if it doesn't break down, it's insoluble. If it does break down, it's soluble. And soluble fiber, when you put that into your diet, it actually binds to cholesterol, and it draws it out of the blood, and it puts it into your digestive system, and then your digestive system will eliminate it over time, right? So in a couple of days, it'll eliminate it. So when you eat things that are high in plant-based fiber, and particularly soluble fiber, it can reduce that, and that also helps to reduce your cholesterol. And that cholesterol then makes the likelihood of plaques to decrease quite a bit. So that's one example of what you could do. Exercise is also very good for patients that are, or people that are concerned about cholesterol levels or concerned about their plaque levels as well.
Great. Bertha, does that answer your question?
Yes, very much. Thank you so much. That's exactly some of the solutions that we're looking for when I'm dealing also with a lot of clients on the fitness side who also need to be conscious of some of the things they need to do as far as matters of the heart. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome. I also want to say that when people are exercising and they tend to eat a higher plant-based diet, it supports their heart, but it may also support, you know, other issues. I have patients that come in all the time, and I don't know if this is true for you, Bertha, but I have patients that come in that want to lose weight. They want to change their body image as well. And if you eat a lot of healthy plant-based foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, you know, nuts and seeds and beans and legumes, if you add that as part of what you're eating, people also tend to lose weight, which then again is supportive of the heart as well, because as you lose weight, your risk for heart disease decreases. So sometimes people get a two-for-one. If they're willing to exercise and eat healthy, they are helping their heart, and they're also helping to change their body composition as well.
Yes. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in, Bertha.
Yes, thank you
all
very
right.
much.
We have another caller, Dr. Day, from the 202 area code, the 483 exchange caller. You're live on the air, Mind, Body, and Soul Food. And our guest is Dr. Day. Do you have a question?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hello, Professor. My name is Van Lal.
Hi, Van Lal.
How are you? Well, thank you so much for putting up the show again. It's just so interesting to know about this. One thing that really got my attention was the, I'm not sure what the term was called. I think it was called heartbreak or something like that.
Broken heart syndrome?
Yeah. Broken heart, yes. Broken heart, yes. And I noticed that in my family too, because like my grand aunt, she passed away from lung cancer, and she and her husband had been together for so many years, and then like within just a few months, not even a year, my grand uncle he passed away too, and I think he died of grief. So would that be like something related to broken heart syndrome? I was just wondering.
Dr. Day, you want to take that?
Sure. Absolutely. One of the things that that we find when we actually look at families or people or husband and wife scenarios is that when one dies, the likelihood that the other will die, particularly if they've been together for a long period of time, is much higher. The incidence of them dying within 1 year is much higher than it would be for, you know, a couple that's 21, for example. And part of that is that their life, you know, the life as they know it has changed. It no longer will be the same because the other person is not there. So when we're kind of looking at the spiritual, we're looking at the emotional pieces, that's really, really important. Is thinking about how do you support someone in their grief process and talking to them in a way that is important to allow them to grieve. And if they no longer have a will to live, they have no desire to live, the quality of their life is so poor without the other person, then we have to honor that and support them in that process if they choose to transition. I think that's really important when we're looking at talking about emotional and spiritual health.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Damon. I would just like to know, is there any way that we can prevent, broken heart syndrome? You know, God forbid I may one day come across that in my life, but is there any way that we can do something to avoid it, maybe eat healthier, do something, be more engaged, or anything of that sort?
The first thing is that you want to make sure that people are in good health. So no matter what age you are, you want to focus on good health.
All right.
And so that's one thing that can help. But the next thing that I really recommend is to always stay engaged with your life. So for example, if it's a couple and the two of you are doing a lot of things together, can you do things with other couples? Because the broken heart syndrome is really kind of, do you have the will to live? Do you have the spirit to continue to live? Do you have an outlook that says that even though someone who's integral to your life is no longer there, there are still others who can benefit from your presence on the planet? So when you look at older couples and their lives are intertwined with each other, do you have siblings that are, you know, among the same age? Do you have grandchildren? Do you have community work that you do? Do you have a sense of purpose and a sense of being for who you are that's not completely attached to the person that you are married to? And when you have a sense of being beyond that, it gives you a will to live. It gives you a desire to live. So if you want to make sure that that doesn't happen to you, no matter what you do, always make sure that you're following your love, your joy, your passion that's unique to you. And that is one of the things that helps people kind of get through the grief process. Mm. What would you say about that, Tanya?
I agree wholeheartedly. Just making sure having that engagement in life, connection with others is so crucial. All right.
Thank you very much, Dr. Damon.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling, Ben
Thank
Law.
You
have a good evening.
You too.
Thank you. All right. Well, time is winding down. I mean, we could talk for a long time about this, or I could listen to you talk for a long time. I imagine your voice is getting a little tired, but we still have more to talk about.
Okay.
I'd like to talk food now.
Okay.
I know I do some healthy cooking, and I really try. I've actually, after having consulted you a few years ago, I really shifted how I cooked and what foods I incorporated into my diet, et cetera, et cetera.
Wonderful.
So I'm wondering if you can talk to folks, give maybe four or five key substitutions they can make or changes in their eating that could help to improve heart health? I know you had talked about the whole grains and the soluble fibers and things like that, but if you could talk about some other, perhaps some other pieces to the pantry or the refrigerator that really are crucial for heart health.
Okay. So absolutely. So again, when we're talking about heart health, there's kind of a general framework that I think about when I work with people. And the first framework that we talked about, which I won't spend a lot of time on, is eating whole foods, so and plant-based foods. I'm not suggesting, and I don't expect every person to be a vegan vegetarian, but I do think that there's always space in our diet to increase the types of whole foods that we're eating. So
yes.
Grains is an example, whole grains, like eating brown rice instead of white rice, trying things like quinoa. I had some friends were over in the last couple of weeks, and I had done some cooking, and I introduced them to quinoa, which is a whole grain. And I love that because it really is very quick to cook. It's, you know,
yes.
It's quicker than white rice even. It's very quick to cook, and it's a whole grain, and so it has those soluble fibers to help support our body really pulling out any extra cholesterol that we don't need. So whole grains are really important. Fruits and vegetables, I ask people to look at their plate and try to make it as colorful as possible. That's a very simple way of looking at your plate. And that fruits and vegetables are a great way of adding color to whatever that you're eating. And the reason why those are important is because the chlorophyll in the green foods and the orange foods with the beta carotene that we can convert to vitamin A. You have the flavonoids that you find in like the berries when you're looking at the purples and the reds, like that kind of thing. So we look at these different colors, and each of these different colors have really important nutrients that support the health of our bodies. So chlorophyll is very important for making sure that we're cleaning out and getting rid of toxins from our body. And the reason that's important is because toxins damage our cells. And when cells get damaged, they don't work as well. So we want to make sure that they can be repaired. Well, how do they get repaired? Well, the orange colors that I was talking to you about when we're talking about carotenoids and beta carotenes and things that get converted to vitamin A, well, vitamin A is what restores those damaged cells back to being whole and healthy cells again. And then another way that we prevent toxins from getting into our bodies and damaging our cells is that we look at those blues and reds, and we look at those different flavonoids, and they actually protect our cells from getting damaged in the first place. So when we're looking at foods, you know, foods can be fun and foods can taste good, and we can enjoy our foods a lot, and at the same time, we can do things to help protect our bodies and protect our hearts, protect our blood vessels, which are a part of that heart of our heart system, our cardiovascular system. And that's how we keep ourselves healthy. So what can we do? Well, if you're someone who really likes snacks and you want to eat snacks during the day, can you eat strawberries start to come into season in April? So we're coming up on that. You know, and we're coming into the spring where you have snap peas and you can have different types of greens that are starting to grow, like, you know, spring greens that are starting to grow, like spinach, for example. Again, starting to come into season in the next month or so. So can you make a spinach salad? Can you put some strawberries on that? So now instead of having kind of a boring salad, you can have a salad that has a little bit more life to it and has a little bit more color to it. Can you have a snack of an apple or an orange or a banana or peaches like in the summertime or grapes or, you know, blueberries? Can you do that? That's a snack that you might have. It might be a dessert that you have. One of the first things, I love sweets. One of the first things I did when I was told that I needed to eat better and I needed to eat whole foods, I stopped eating cakes and I started eating pies, right? So what's the difference? Well, you can have fruit pies. You can have blueberry pie, you can have strawberry pie, you can have apple pie. And you know what? Even if it's just that one thing that you start to get used to eating more fruits and vegetables, that might be a place to start. And then you might start having it as snacks, and you might start having it making smoothies with different types of fruits in it, you know, during the summer. So you start to kind of build this idea of eating well and eating healthy and eating in a way that it tastes really good to you. You know, the summertime is great for asparagus and for different types of salads and for different types of greens, you know, because you tomatoes, you know, there's a lot of fruits and vegetables that are coming into season. So when you start thinking about how can I change, just how can you add more fruits and vegetables to your diet? How can you add more color to your plate? And you start creating a scenario where you're actually being heart healthy, and you are doing that just from that simple idea of adding color to your plate.
Well, Dr. Day, I am a Libra, so I'll play devil's advocate.
Okay.
And I know this is something that would come out of the mouth of some family members of mine.
Sure.
Well, sure, I'll eat salad if I have plenty of blue cheese or ranch to slather all over it.
Okay. So, you know what? One of the easiest things to make are salad dressings and marinades.
Yes.
It takes like 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. And so when people say, okay, well, I want to make that, you know, that's what I want to slather all over it, then I'm like, okay, well, you know what? Let's try to see if we can get the taste that you want and if you can make it yourself. Because just in the process of doing that, you can put healthy things like olive oil, for example, is a very, very, very heart-healthy oil. So if you want to make a blue cheese dressing, then that's fine. Then I want you to make a blue cheese dressing, but I want you to use olive oil, and I want you to use, you know, maybe only a tablespoon of blue cheese, and then I want you to put a nice vinegar or vinaigrette in there, and you can add a little teeny bit of something sweet, like whether it's agave nectar, which is a sweet nectar that a lot of people like, or you put a little bit of honey in there, so you can use that. You can use a little bit of stevia. You know, there are lots of natural sweeteners that you can use, and you're going to, you know, kind of mix that up with maybe some parsley and some or some other type of herb. So if you want to make that, if you want to use that for your salad dressing, no problem, but you make the salad dressing. And now you have probably changed it and made it a lot more healthy, and you've made it to your specific taste. And over time, you're going to notice that if you can do that, you can do other types of salad dressings. And 6 months from now, a year from now, you are now eating a healthy salad that maybe doesn't even have blue cheese or ranch all over it.
Excellent. Well, you know, we have a couple of more callers, so let's see if we can get some brief questions in. We have another caller from the 202 area code with the 388 exchange. Caller, you're live on the air. Do you have a question for Dr. Day?
Hi, Dr. Falk. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, but I'm not doctor.
I'm Professor Falk. How are you? I'm sorry.
I'm good, thanks. And who are we speaking with this evening?
Elaine Jones.
Hi, Elaine. What's your question?
Hi, Dr. Dave. I have a question. I was saying hi to the Dr. Dave.
Nope.
Okay.
Hello. How
keep
are
it
you?
High.
My question was about a person with a hole in the heart.
Okay.
You change from broken heart stress to eating right, and she eats, you know, but she'll eat 2 or 3 spoons of greens because she likes vegetables.
Okay.
And she eats fruits, and I hear you talking about the fruit pies and stuff. The fruit works better with her.
Okay.
Because the fruit pies, she's not. But her hole in her heart is closing now. But she was stressed over the holidays, and I mean, I'm talking about a 7-year-old child was very stressed, that it was very scary. And she's eating just a little bit. What can we do with that? I mean, because we try to, we fuss, eat. We eat together.
Okay.
And she's still not really picking up weight.
So you're saying she has a physical or a physical condition where she has a hole in her heart?
Yeah.
And are the doctors managing that in some way, or does she need to actually have surgery?
No, well, she was born with it.
Okay.
And now that she's 7, it's closing up.
Okay.
Started like at 6, closing
okay.
up gradually.
Okay.
But better she was eating when she was a baby than definitely what she's eating now.
So do you spend a lot of time talking to her about what she's eating?
Yeah.
Are there a lot of conversations about that?
Yeah, because we eat together so that everybody will eat. So we'll keep her eating. And
okay.
She might take two spoons of greens, a spoon of potatoes,
mm-hmm.
and drink her milk, and I'm full. I'm not hungry anymore.
Okay. So there are a couple of things that you can do. First, if you're spending a lot of time and kind of, you know, kind of singling her out about what she's eating and everybody knows that, that might be making her self-conscious, and it also might be a way that she's getting attention. So you might just want to consider, as you're working with her on that those might be some ways that she's getting attention. And if there are other ways that she can get attention that are not revolved around her eating, you may see her eating change. So there's, with children, you always have to kind of look at behavioral things. But another thing that you can do if you are not doing it now is perhaps try to get her interested in helping prepare foods.
Well,
so that
we do that.
You do that.
We do that. We let her help prepare.
And does she
okay.
take more ownership and tend to eat more of those things that she's preparing?
Nope.
No.
I don't know what's going on.
Okay. Well, if that is not working, what I would really suggest is thinking about the things that she really likes to eat and seeing
okay.
different ways that you can integrate them. So if she likes fruits, and the other thing about younger people that are younger is, do you let her build her plate or do you build her plate?
Sometimes we let her build it.
So, you know, letting her build it kind of gives her some ownership. And even if she only puts a few things on the plate, that's just, you know, let her do it. And if she finishes it all off, praise her for that.
Right.
And then she may actually begin wanting to do a little bit more as a result of that. And then look at other things like, you know, smoothies or kind of being adventurous with different foods, maybe in non-traditional ways, giving her dinner for breakfast. If she really likes greens, give her greens for breakfast instead of something else. And see if you can just get her to eat during the day or graze more. Like instead of having her eat 3 times a day, have her eat 5 or 6 times a day. And then she might eat a little bit during each one of those times, but over the course of the day, she's eating more. So those are a couple suggestions that may be helpful to you.
Okay, yes, okay.
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 Well,
thank you
so much for calling, Elaine.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're not able to get to all of our callers because time is running down.
Oh.
If you could just let us know your contact information, Dr. Day, so if there are folks who would like to dine at your healing table and perhaps purchase a copy of your cookbook or participate in some of your healthy cooking classes, we need to know how to contact you.
Sure. If anybody's on Twitter, you can contact me at Dr. Day. That's my Twitter name. If you're looking at me in Facebook, you can find the name of my practice. It's Healthy, and it's spelled Days, but it's spelled D-A-E-S instead of D-A-Y-S. So Healthy Days Naturopathic Medical Center, and you can join and become a friend or a fan or whatever on Facebook. Just like my website is healthydays.com. Again, it's healthy, D-A-E-S, instead of D-A-Y-S.com. And I have lots of articles on there, and we're actually going to be revamping the site. So it'll be really exciting for anybody that wants to hang out with us in the next 3 months and see how the site and some of the offerings will change. So those are great ways to reach out to me.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us this evening and
Thank you.
Empowering us to enhance our heart health holistically. And I invite our listeners to tune in again next month. We will be airing on the third Sunday versus the second Sunday, Easter. So on tax day, we'll have our annual April Allergy Angel show. So this year, we'll have Lorraine Raimondo, holistic nurse and aromatherapist, and Julie Magrum will be back. She is our resident acupuncturist, Chinese medicine, and Qi Gong practitioner. And you may remember her from our October Holistic Approaches to Cancer show. So we really hope you'll tune in. And thank you so much, Dr. Day. And
thank you.
With Mind, Body, and Soul Food to Go from Dr. Charles Mayo, worry affects the circulation, the hearts, the gland, the whole nervous system, and profoundly affects heart action. So in the words of Bobby McFerrin, don't worry, be happy. And I add, be healthy. Take care.
Thank you.